In her new book, Rescuing Julia Twice, Tina Traster tells a foreign adoption story from dealing with the bleak landscape and inscrutable adoption handlers in Siberia to her feelings of inexperience and ambivalence at being a new mother in her early 40s, to her growing realization over months, then years, that something was not quite right with her daughter Julia, who remained cold and emotionally detached. Why wouldn't she look at her parents in the eye or accept their embraces? Why didn't she cry when she got hurt? Why didn't she make friends at school? Traster describes how uncertainty turned to despair as she blamed herself and her mothering skills for her daughter's troublesome behavioral issues until she came to understand that Julia suffered from reactive attachment disorder, a serious condition associated with infants and young children who have been neglected, abused, or orphaned in infancy. Traster describes how with work, commitment, and acceptance, she and her husband have been able to close the gulf between them and their daughter. She writes about it again in her book, Rescuing Julia Twice, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tina Traster to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
A delight to have you here. This is a really interesting story, and it's a fascinating book because, I mean, you're going in your own uncertainties here, but at what point was the aha moment? Because it seems in the book like there was an aha moment that it wasn't you, that there was something more to the story here.
Well, there was the creeping suspicion that went on for quite a while. Sort of the storm that was rolling. But one night on television, I happened to, by chance, catch a woman doing a prison interview. And her name was Natalie Higuer. And she had been in prison for accidentally killing her 2-year-old adopted Russian child. And she was filled with remorse, but in her description of trying to be the mother of a child who couldn't accept love and who was oppositional and who was just impossible to parent, that's when I had the aha moment that there might be something more to what my own child was dealing with. And seeing her story and seeing her own life spiral out of control and seeing as she ended up resorting to violence and finding herself in prison, that is when I took to action. I took that was the moment that made me truly spring into action.
I want to talk about that in a moment. As the title of the book indicates, it's Rescuing Julia Twice. So the first time, of course, being the adoption.
Of course. Of
being the adoption from a Siberian orphanage in 2003. Did it feel at the time that it was rescuing a child?
No, it felt that it was completing a family. It was starting and completing
right.
a family. My husband and I were both 40. We had been on the fertility track shortly. We abandoned that. We felt that there were so many children in need of a home out
right.
there. Russia seemed to make sense because we did not want to deal with domestic adoption. So we turned to an international adoption. These were the go-go years of international adoption. We saw it all around us. It was possible and it was a sure thing. And so we went forward with Russia. We both have Russian background. Our grandparents are all from that region of the world. And we pursued that. And we were so thrilled and delighted when they told us there was an 8-month-old baby in Siberia. We had been warned that we were unlikely to get a child who was much younger than maybe 12 months to 18 months old. So at 8 months old, we thought, wow, we really have a chance here with an infant who potentially maybe has not been, you know, too badly affected by her earliest days. But, you know, it would prove that we were wrong about that.
Mm. And was coming to adoption, because this is your story as well.
It is my story.
Of coming to this decision of adopting. And which is not an easy decision.
No.
You know, I say this for context, but my wife and I found out very early in our marriage that my wife was unable. We were unable to have children, and it's something that you consider and that you think about, and it's a very complex thing. And I mean, to the point where we finally made a definitive decision that we weren't going to do it.
Yeah, you have to mourn your own infertility.
Right.
You have to give up the hopes of having your own biological child, one who might look like you and or be like you or feel completely of your DNA. You have to acknowledge that you're not going to go through the birth process as a woman and not know what that feels like.
Right.
And then there is the complete mystery and enigma of taking a child who is not your own. And in particular, what we learned, but of course, this is really 2020 that I'm speaking about now. When you're going through that adoption process, you're so focused on getting that baby. I mean, you're just down a narrow tunnel, and
it's the eye on the prize.
It is. You just all you want to do is have that baby home with you, and so you find yourself on a rather absurd path. Where even though you cannot attain information that potentially is true about the child's earliest days or the mother's condition, you put that aside and you hope for the best and you figure, I'm going to love away anything that could have possibly happened to this child before she lands in my hands. Again, that is what I learned is naive.
But and it's safe to say that even right now, while you have filled in some of the blanks, you still don't know what the first 8 months of Julia's life.
I never will.
Right.
I never will know. But I will say that in seeing her in such despair in those early years and dealing with such a difficult child, what we were able to arrive at is an understanding of how deeply wounded that child is and how deeply wounded many internationally adopted and foster care children are because of that lack of nurture and lack of consistency and lack of attention in those earliest of years. And by understanding that pain, at least, by gaining the empathy to understand what such a young child could feel and how it can affect their behavior and their thinking and even their whole physiological being, that is what gave us the best fighting chance to change her life, to change our lives, to turn things around, and to put her on the right path.
So with a diagnosis comes some understanding of what you can do to make the situation better.
Yes, definitely. An understanding of what that break from the maternal bond is, I would say, the first step toward healing.
Right.
Now, whether you do it with professional therapy or whether you come to learn this syndrome and understand it and apply, you know, techniques, that's a choice that parents will make. But, you know, back in 2003 when we were, this is what I was saying before, when we were on that adoption path, we were never educated about reactive attachment disorder or any of the other potential emotional problems we might encounter. I admit that I did not school myself in this, but even if I had taken the seminars that are now given or read a book, I still would not have been prepared for what I had actually experienced as a new mother. And so it is one thing to be informed and enlightened going
right
into the process. It's another thing to really be able to develop the empathy that you are going to need to understand why your child won't look you in the eye or cooperate in any way whatsoever, or bond with you or connect to you or hold your hand when that child is 18 months old and you have to cross a street.
You cite, and this is, and I read this, and I mention this as to give it some context. But so since the early 1990s, 20 Russian children adopted into American families have died at the hands of their parents, and they were victims of manslaughter or murder or aggravated assault. and from 18 months to 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, those parents cited this reactive attachment disorder as in their defense, as part of their defense. So while we mention, while we say that, and also my thought of, okay, whatever, but it's still indefensible, but to put it into your court that of how strong that emotion is when you're not feeling the bond with the child.
That's exactly right. And that is why I've written this book, because I've written it for two reasons. One is to invite other parents to understand that they are not alone and isolated and experiencing something that is entirely about their own deficiency. And I have also written this book to create a national dialogue, to start talking about RAD and the other conditions that children, that internationally adopted and foster care children are riddled and racked with, so that when children like Julia enter their preschools and their go to the pediatrician or see therapists or deal with their uncles and aunts and grandparents, that we understand as a society what we are looking at, how these children are presenting and why. I mean, what I say is, I walk into a room and I say, how many people have heard of autism? And everybody anywhere, everywhere raises their hand.
Right.
But when you ask people, have you heard of reactive attachment disorder? Unless you happen to be living in this world that I live in, that we as adoptive parents live in, there's a good chance you've never heard that phrase. And even beyond that, you don't understand or you haven't heard what adoptive parents are struggling with. So this book is designed to take us out of the isolation, to allow us to feel less judged, and to connect us with the greater world of particularly adults who interact with our children, so that these children can be flagged earlier, understood better, and that the families can feel more supported and really less blamed for their child's behavior.
It should be noted that you would be unable to rescue, to adopt Julia now, because the Russian government, President Putin, has stopped all adoptions from Russia to American parents. Why specifically America?
Well, that was, as some believe, you know, a political retaliation on the Magnitsky Act, right? So, you know, Russia has used the statistic of the deaths to justify its actions. But as you know, Russia is shutting down adoptions all over the world. If you take them at face value, they say they want to turn inward and keep their own children. But it would take generations to segue children into families. And so at this point, what we have are the numbers vary, but the number I know is 600,000 languishing in orphanages in Russia, which is tragic.
One of the things that you write about in the book is that this is not just an adoptive problem either. This disorder certainly makes itself present in foster care situations and other situations without international implications.
Exactly. This is way beyond Russian adoption, the 60,000 children that are here from Russia. This is a national problem that's off the radar.
Yeah.
This is a problem that many, many, many children and even adults suffer from sheer neglect and abuse. But we don't have a name for this. It's not easily identifiable. Therapists like to say this is a very rare condition, and yet if you get into a room with the parents of 15 adopted children, internationally, particularly from Russia, we all know what we're talking about when we describe our children's behavior.
You really started to put all the pieces together when Julia was four,
mm-hmm.
right? And she's how old now?
She is turning 12.
Okay. So what has that 8 years been like?
It's been a complete transformation. It really has. I mean, we have turned her life around. She has turned her life around. I think It started with understanding. It progressed with counterintuitive parenting. It started to really turn around when she really became bonded and relaxed into the idea that she was our child. In these 7 or 8 years, through her own incredible innate talents as both an artist and a musician, as well as being the only child who is indulged, as well as being the child of two people who have a phenomenally tight and collaborative marriage and a solid, stable home, she has been able to, not only the bonding was the glue, but she has taken off, she has confidence, she has ability, she's an honor student, she functions highly. I mean, she functions highly, you wouldn't know that there's something wrong. But all that said, where her weakness still resides is in the idea of intimate relationships, one-on-one relationships. A one-on-one, a BFF, is still a great challenge for this child who's turning 12. So she's liked by everybody, but not particularly close to anyone except for my husband and I. So that's, I would say, the next frontier as we enter into adolescence.
It was medicine involved? Was
no, never.
Okay.
No.
And was that your choice?
Our choice of life, and it always was this way, is an organic, meat-free, poultry-free diet.
Okay.
A lot of exercise, a structured life, a lot of sleep.
And just so I understand, would there, if that were not your lifestyle, would there have been a prescribed?
Well, that's.
I mean, is there something that is usually prescribed?
You know, it depends on what the whole mixture of symptoms that a child is suffering from. If you have a child with sensory disorder or fetal alcohol syndrome or
right.
other things that are mixed in, which often comes with the territory, perhaps then that is part of the healing, the picture. For us, we just felt that if we worked with her on attachment, that everything else would start to flow. And I think that that has proven to be the case, that it was the getting her bonded and attached, was the clincher.
What about therapy for her and for you?
Well, we haven't needed therapy yet. That is always an option, a possibility. I think that we would be poised at least to know whether we were in a competent therapist's hands at this point.
Right.
What, you know, I have a website, juliaandme.com, and thousands of people have come my way sharing stories and asking advice and telling me of how much failed therapy they have experienced along the way with their children. And in many cases, the outcome is not good.
And the reason I ask the question is because I think of a 12-year-old child. And so you're starting into that soon to be a teenager, soon to be dating, soon to be,
yes.
you know, all of the things that we love about adolescence.
Warnings have been issued.
There you go. So to allow that to happen in a normal course of action, especially with your concerns of close relationships with others.
Yep.
You know, other than encouragement, at some point she has to take over the work that you've been doing over the past 8 years.
You know, one of the hallmarks, I think, of our success with Julia is that my husband and I are partners in raising her, and we have been, and every day of our lives is about a conversation about where she is today, where she
right.
is at any given moment. And it is partially that conversation, that ongoing conversation, that guides us through this. And so, you know, that's very comforting.
And you get the sense in the book, I mean, this is never over, obviously.
It will never be over.
And she never, like, cured.
No, it will never be over. She's deeply wounded. She has manifestations of a child who did not start her life the proper way. That's what I'm saying. We are hyper aware of this. It is part of our consciousness always. I advocate for her everywhere. Every teacher, every counselor, every moment of her life, I am there advocating for her so that people understand why her behavior sometimes seems so counterintuitive. And yeah, this is for the long haul.
You use that term counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, the counterintuitive parenting. And
right.
And because we think of, well, this is the way you should, this is the way we're told. And although, interestingly enough, as you mentioned, the adoption as in a traditional childbirth, you know, you're not given a pamphlet.
No.
You know, here's the instruction book. Have fun. You're on your own.
Yeah. No, there's no instructions to this. But once you understand the way their brain works,
right,
that's half the battle.
And do you think and realizing that with Russian adoption it's not being an option anymore, but do you think that there is at least a greater understanding so that when doctors and therapists and schools and other organizations are involved that this could be caught quicker?
I think we are at the tip of the iceberg and so much more needs to be done. I am finding a lot of therapists coming my way who mm-hmm. want to talk about this, who are aware, but I would say that's where it's only beginning. And I think that when you get to the level of schools and administrators and principals and guidance counselors, I would say there is virtually almost no awareness of what I've written about, what we're talking about here. That's the problem.
The name of the book is Rescuing Julia Twice, A Mother's Tale of Russian Adoption and Overcoming Reactive Attachment Disorder. Tina Traster is the author. The book is published by Chicago Review Press. Tina, I thank you so much for sharing your story with us and sharing Julia's story and for your honesty and candor. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.